Welcome to Movie Dudes episode 227, the penultimate episode. I am Jeff, joined as always by Chris.
Hey.
And on this episode, we are going to count down our top 10 non-horror films of the decade. But before we get into that, I do have a big announcement. And you heard me correctly at the top. This is the second to last episode of Movie Dudes. Our next episode, which will be the top 10 horror films of the decade, will be the last regular episode of Movie Dudes. I could get into a long explanation as to why, but just felt right to me, and this was my decision. So if anyone is upset by this, Chris had nothing to do with it. but real short as to why, just felt right to me. We've been doing this for roughly a decade, and this show was kind of conceived at a different time. Like at the time, I didn't even really listen to podcasts yet, and I kind of thought that we could like be the continuation of Roger and Ebert, or Ebert and Siskel and Ebert at the movies. And it's been a lot of fun, but I just feel like it's time to turn the page and try something new.
Yeah, like that the style of like two guys giving thumbs up, thumbs down reviews, like. It's a little bit stale.
You know, if our show was like a huge hit with thousands of listeners and stuff still, I don't think I would walk away from doing this. I love reviewing movies. I love talking about movies. It's been a lot of fun talking movies with you, Chris. But, you know, there'll be something around the corner. I'd say stay tuned. And
you know, we're not done.
Like, yeah, and while this is the last regular, or not, this is not, but the next will be the last regular episode of Movie Dudes. If you listen, stay subscribed. We'll be posting announcements, maybe some special episodes down the line. But as far as weekly movie reviews of new stuff, the show's over. But we're going to go out with a bang here, talking about our favorite films of the decade. And the reason we're doing this in like tonight, we're doing non-horror, and then we're going to do horror next week, is because if it's not like horror isn't good enough to be on this list. It's just if I did a top 10 films of the decade and didn't separate them out, it would pretty much be all horror for me. So that's kind of the logic behind that.
We've had a large horror component over the years, so
yeah, and I think it's fitting that we're gonna end on an episode where we just kind of focus on horror. I think it's the genre you and I kind of connect with most together in a way. Like that's the one. It's for me personally, it's my favorite genre of film. Like I don't think anything even comes close. So I know you're a big horror fan as well. So
yeah,
and maybe that's kind of a clue of things to come. But anyways. Let's get into it. Let's just break the seal on this and start going through it. And we'll start with number 10 going down. Chris, what's your number 10?
All right. So mine are not necessarily in a great order here.
You do it on the fly here.
You know? Yeah. But so when we get to number one, like maybe it's not actually my number one, but these are the top 10 that I have come up with. I'm going to go with one from this past year, 2019, as my number 10, Knives Out.
Damn.
Rian Johnson, his kind of comedy whodunit drama with a stellar ensemble cast. Just a ton of fun. It's just a movie that's a ton of fun with great performances throughout. And I love the idea of here's this mystery and we know what's happened. Like from the get-go, it's just how does everything play out?
It feels like we know everything and we're shown everything. Yeah, like sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No.
That's what I loved about it too.
Like it's such a different take on the mystery genre where it's like, I honestly sitting there for the first like half hour of this film, like it's weird. like, this is very weird because they're basically telling us who did this, and are we like watching her? And but then as things play out, as more bits of information get laid in, there's more layers to it that indicate that everything that has happened didn't necessarily go down the way that truthfully it did happen. Yeah. So it's a lot of fun. I think the performances are fantastic. It's a blast.
Yeah, I think if you're a fan of like the whodunit genre, it's really kind of subverts your expectations. I enjoyed it a lot. It didn't even make my top 10 last year, but I enjoyed it, but it's kind of like a one and done for me. I don't see myself buying it or anything. Maybe watch it maybe one more time, but it is a good movie. So it's interesting. I should have mentioned this right at the very top. I can't wait to see what your list is, because mine's kind of out there, and you might think you know mine, Chris. There have been some changes, though, but yours, I have no idea what's coming, so it's going to be a surprise to me all the way.
That'll be fun.
But my number 10 is Martin Scorsese's The Wolf of Wall Street from 2013. That one is weird because when I first saw it, I was blown away that it was like 3 hours long and a comedy, and that somehow worked. And not only like worked, but it was like one of the funniest fucking movies I've ever seen. And it kind of had something to say about, you know, our values and like the things that we kind of hold up in society as important. It's weird though, because like, it's one that I thought I would have watched a billion times. I don't think I've seen it since it came out. But even still, like, you know, when I was looking back at the decade and trying to put together this list, I'm like, there's no way I can't have it on there, because it was just such a wild ride, just so much fun. And like, I can still remember parts of it, even though I haven't seen it in what, like 7 years now. So that's my number 10.
It's actually very surprising that you haven't seen it since you watched like the 40 times
since it came out. So. I've seen the Irishman more times than The Wolf of Wall Street, and that's only been out for a month or two. Well, let's move along to our next pick. What do you have as your next number 9?
We'll call my it. Number 9 is the wonderful little family comedy, The Muppets from 2011, which starred Jason Segel and Amy Adams. It was kind of a revival of the Muppets, bringing back what made them great. And like, actually, I think Jason Segel, who co-wrote it as well, like he understood what made the Muppets engaging and fun in the first place, and created an excellent movie that's up there with the best like Muppet stuff out there. It's a ton of fun, great musical numbers. Excellent like comedy that like self-deprecating, like within the Muppets, like they make fun of the fact that they maybe aren't relevant anymore, and then in doing so made themselves relevant, at least for that moment, because they've tried to do some Muppet stuff since then that has failed miserably. But it's a blast. Like, I love this movie.
It doesn't surprise me that it's on your list, because I still remember, I think you gave that your movie of the year when it came out. I don't even know if I've seen it. I can't remember. But I did see it recently, actually earlier tonight, on a underappreciated films of the decade list. It was on there.
It's just so much fun. Like, it's in a decade that has been a little shitty. Like it is a fun movie to visit. So
would you say it's your favorite Muppets or no?
It's up there. I don't know if it's my favorite Muppet movie. I think the Great Muppet Caper is probably still my favorite. But this one is definitely more modern, and definitely has modern sensibilities to it that maybe Great Muppet Caper and Muppets Take Manhattan, that stuff doesn't have. I still am just saddened that Disney has not given us a solid weekly Muppet show. Like, they tried to do a Muppet show on ABC, but it was like, it was almost like an Office or what was that Tina Fey show where she's like the producer of a TV show?
30 Rock.
Maybe. Yeah, like they tried to do it that way. Like, no, just give us a fucking variety show. Like, that's what the Muppets are. And like, they do stupid musical numbers with celebrities, and it's funny. And this got that. Tons of great cameos in it. So,
all right. My number nine is Her from 2013 by Spike Jones. To my thinking, this is kind of like this decade's Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. It's, you know, it's a real strong sci-fi film, but also like a strong romance. And, you know, both parts of that equation are working really well. Joaquin Phoenix plays a guy who falls in love with his operating system, who is voiced by Scarlett Johansson. And just, I don't know, I found it really, like, really fascinating and interesting. I was kind of obsessed with that movie for, like, months after it came out. Just kind of had a lot to say while also being, like it really worked as, like, a, you know, a romance about people falling in love and falling out of love, even though it was this computer. It kind of felt like I had stuff to say about how technology has made us more isolated and lonely. You know, that, and just, you know, what is the nature of love? Could you fall in love with something that isn't human? I don't know. I think I've asked a lot of big questions and was just also really engaging on an emotional level. It's crazy. I don't think Jones has done a movie since, but the ones he's put out there have been pretty great for the most part. And yeah, Hearst stood out for me this decade. It's been a while since I watched it, but there, you know, I think when it came out, I watched it 2-3 times at least. So
that's one I still like. I remember you raving about it when you saw it, and you did watch it multiple times. Like, I just have not gotten to see it yet, and I probably should make time for it at some point.
Oh yeah. I mean, if you love sci-fi, again, it's like, I think if you liked Eternal Sunshine, this is kind of like in that same vein, and I would say about as smart. So definitely check it out. Chris, number eight.
Number eight on mine is, it's the only superhero movie that's going to make this list for me. You probably don't have any on yours.
I do not.
But it's 2017's Logan. The final Wolverine movie. Probably not the final Wolverine movie, but the final Wolverine movie starring Hugh Jackman in that role that he had kind of been playing for the last 20 years. And it's a fantastic movie about like a father and daughter, and coming to grips with how far you'd go to protect your kid. And you even see some of that, the parental stuff with Charles and Logan themselves, like the way they interact. You know, that's more of a child and parent relationship than you know, Logan and X-23, Lara, the girl that Logan kind of adopts. But some great themes in it. Excellent action. It's just, it's very well paced. Like, it's not your nose to the wall, high speed comic book, like normal Marvel comic book stuff. It there's more weight to it here. They let stuff breathe a little bit more. The action is great, but there seems to be more meaning to it than some of your standard Marvel and DC fare. So
if I had to pick my favorite comic book film of the decade, it would probably be Logan. It's a great movie. Like, it's I don't even really think of it as a comic book movie. It's like a great action movie. I've always kind of leaned more towards the X-Men stuff than the MCU proper, you know.
I think it's more interesting. Like, it's messier.
Yeah, it's grungier.
More interesting.
And Logan, I mean, the big thing that sticks out for me besides some of the action sequences is my lord bawling my eyes out at the ending of that thing. Like, holy shit. Like, you could hear the whole theater was, like, crying at the end. Dude, when she turns the cross and makes it an X, oh my god, dude. Yeah, great movie. Great pick. My number eight is Prisoners from 2013. I swear all my films are not from 2013. It's funny. Prisoners, I didn't see until, I think, last year. I don't know how I avoided it, but boy, did it kind of blow me away. It was just like this super just well done crime thriller about, like, I think this, you know, it's like Hugh Jackman once again as this dad who goes, like, unhinged looking for his kid, and he starts to, you know, he thinks it's this guy, takes him prisoner, and then you got Jake Gyllenhaal as this cop that's also trying to work on the case. And this thing is just, again, it's like a top shelf crime thriller. Looks great. Just amazing looking film.
Yeah, and that's something that this was directed by Denis Villeneuve.
Yeah. I think Roger Deakins might have done the photography on it too.
Yeah, it's a beautiful looking movie, which is weird because it's kind of a straight crime drama.
It's a hell of an example of that genre. Like, I can't believe it took me so long to get to it, but once it did, it was always in the running for my top of the decade and landed on the list. So let's move along to your number seven.
My number seven is my film of the year from 2018, A Star Is Born.
Damn.
Bradley Cooper's debut. And kind of a, not that Lady Gaga hadn't been acting previously, but kind of a huge star turn role for her. Mm-hmm. I had never seen the two previous A Star Is Born films. But something about, like, this kind of big time, maybe like even fading musician, fading celebrity, kind of falling in love with this younger up and coming star, and just seeing his descent and how she has to deal with it until ultimately he makes a choice that it's just tragic. And then that scene with the fucking dog outside still gets me. I think the music is great. That soundtrack is one of the best soundtracks of the decade. It's funny because I'm not a huge fan of musicals, but I end up liking a lot of, like, really high profile ones. And this was a great one. So,
yeah, good soundtrack. I loved that he had a real eye for casting in that too. Like, the guy that played his brother.
Sam Elliott's excellent. Andrew Dice Clay.
That's who I was trying to think of. Like, yeah, and, like, you never had seen him, like, this kind of grounded and likable. And the songs were great. I'm surprised that Lady Gaga hasn't done anything big since, but yeah, it's a good movie. I didn't love it quite as much, but I liked it. Number seven for me is a film I didn't like the first time I saw it, but boy, has it grown on me through rewatches and now owning it on Blu-ray, and that is Mad Max Fury Road. I think this is a film you and I kind of agreed on when we first reviewed it, was just kind of like had good action, like technically good, but like we didn't connect with it that much.
Yeah.
If I remember correctly, but for one, like it doesn't seem like there's a lot going on in it. It's just like they drive one way through the desert and they turn around and drive back.
Drive back the other way.
Yeah. But there's like themes going on.
There are,
you know, kind of under the surface a little. Like, there's just like little things in there that are just like, you know, really saying stuff. But more than that, it's just, this thing is a ride, man. Like, it fucking looks incredible. The score is just like, holy shit. Like, it just drives the action home. And the action itself, nothing I think in the decade really fucking lives up to Fury Road. Like, it's just crazy shit going on. Like, there's a part where the fucking bikes are flying over the, like, they're going off little hills and flying over the truck, and they're, like, shooting up at the people on the bikes and shit, and it's just, like, it's fucking awesome. The music's soaring, and it's just, like, this is an incredible sequence. And then when you, think about it, it's kind of like the same thing with the Mission Impossible movies, where it's just, like, they really did this shit? Like, how?
Right. It's the practical effects on it are astounding, and it's kind of just shocking to see, like, one, like, how did you get anybody to fund you to do this stuff? Because, like, the insurance on it has to be astronomical.
yeah, it's a movie that took them a long time to get made too. I don't know if they're gonna do a follow-up or what, but, like, as it is, I think it just stands as the best action film of the decade. And if you haven't rewatched it, Chris, I implore you to give it another shot. It looks great. You know, watch it in 4K on your, you know, big TV at your house.
Yeah, I have it in Ultra HD.
Yeah. It's one of my best 4K purchases for sure. So then I think we're moving along now to your number six.
Number six is Quentin Tarantino's Django Unchained.
Dang,
2012. I am not a Western fan. I think we have established that over the last decade on this. And I don't even know if you can even, maybe it's a Western. I don't know.
Yeah.
In a way, I guess. But it's like so over the top and nutty that I really got down with this film. I think it's my favorite Quentin Tarantino film of you know, this kind of run, his last four or five films. It's just a ton of fun. It has a lot of, like, his shtick to it, but a lot of his quirks are in it. But Jamie Foxx is excellent. Christoph Waltz, Leonardo DiCaprio, and that, he's fucking amazing. Samuel Jackson as well. Like, the cast, his and like, look, Tarantino's casts are always phenomenally picked and give great performances. But there's just something, like, fun and outlandish about all of Django Unchained that I just really got behind.
It has a hell of a climax too, like when the action really starts.
Yeah,
like,
you know, yeah. People
start to get their comeuppance. It's I would put, for me personally, like in this, I'd say, like, this last decade of work from him, I would put it above The Hateful Eight. And I really love I love Django Unchained, but I think I love Inglourious Bastards and Once Upon a Time a little more.
Yeah, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood's up there for me. Inglourious Basterds, I never connected with that.
I didn't like it the first time, but it was another example of rewatch. I really liked it. Like, there's some super tense, like, scenes at just dinner tables in it. Like, there's like three really intense scenes. They're just people talking.
I mean, that's a lot of what Tarantino does. Is, like,
yeah.
He just does people talking in a certain way. For some reason, that one never clicked with me, but Django really did. And
I'm due for a Django rewatch.
So what do you got?
My number six is The Irishman. So we kind of talked about this on our last episode. But to me, it's just kind of like a culmination of Scorsese's career, especially like the mob films he's done. And it also feels like a culmination of just filmmaking in general and just, like, kind of looking back at the last, you know, four or five decades and the big actors from that period, you know, like Robert De Niro, Al Pacino, Joe Pesci. And it just feels like a work from a great director in the twilight of his career, you know, and it has, like, that kind of somber feel of, fuck, death is coming for all of us. I don't think I've seen a film express it quite as well as The Irishman does. So, it was my pick for the best film of 2019, and it made it here on the list.
Nice.
But I won't say any more. This is just say there's surprises to come.
That's fine.
What do you got for number five? Here we go. We're getting in the top five now.
Number five. So, this might be a little bit of a surprise because we two picks ago, I said, you know, my 2018 film of the year, Stars Born.
This is kind of what I was just hitting at, but
and Black Klansman for me, nice. on rewatch, and there's just, man, Spike Lee nails it with that movie.
Yeah.
And even more than Spike Lee nailing it with that movie, John David Washington nails it in that movie. He is fucking perfect. Yeah. So is
Driver.
Adam Driver. Yeah, he's also excellent in it. But and this, I like John David Washington coming into this film, and after watching this, I will watch anything.
He owns that role. He does. He really does.
It's such a great film. It's funny. It's, you know, it's based on loosely based on a true story. But Spike Lee is able to intersperse like some comedy in this really dark, dark material. you know, 'cause we're dealing with the fucking KKK, like,
yeah,
infiltrating the KKK and trying to take them down from the inside. And they nail it here. And then just to kind of like, maybe, and I've heard this complaint, we talked about it, and I don't think either of us kind of had it as a complaint, but the fact that he just kind of ties it into the what is going on in the world today, specifically in the United States, and like pushing it at us and like saying, hey, like, yo, yeah, this is a funny movie, right? Like, and the good guys win in the end, but this shit's still going on. Like, and yeah. I know people are like, oh, well, I didn't really want that pushed on me. Like, it didn't need to be so blunt. Like, nah, I think Spike Lee nailed it with that. It needs to be blunt. People need to know that, like, yeah, this is entertainment and this shit happened 40 years ago. And, you know, and they were doing this 40 years ago, but we're still doing it today, is a super deep meaning. So,
dude, I sometimes have conversations with people where they're like, I don't see why people think Trump is so bad. And I'm like, what are you talking about, dude? Like, have you paid attention to anything? Like, did you pay attention to history in school? Like, so I think he did need to be blunt about it too. And the movie is just so fun and funny that it makes the ending hit like a ton of bricks.
Yeah.
You could have heard a pin drop in that theater. It's a great movie. My number five, Chris, you had a musical on your list. I have a musical on mine.
Oh, well.
La La Land from 2016.
I am not surprised by that.
from Damien Chazelle. It's, I love the, first, I love the soundtrack. I love the songs in it. The
soundtrack is phenomenal.
I love the colors in the film, like the bright color palette. I love Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone together in it. It's just a nice, fun, kind of bittersweet romance. Like, it's just a nice movie. It kind of like, it, you know, although it's bittersweet, it just makes me happy when I watch it, because I'm like, I just love the music and I love the colors and stuff. It's turned into like a kind of annual rewatch for me. It's actually, I've made it into a Christmas movie because when it came out in 2016, it came out in like December. I saw it in late December. So I just always kind of remember it as something I saw around Christmas.
Associate it with that time of year. Yeah.
And the film actually starts and ends at Christmas. Like, he gets fired on Christmas or at the beginning of the film and stuff. So, hey, man, if you could call Die Hard a Christmas film, you could call La La Land a Christmas film.
Yeah, sure. Why not?
Yeah, I just love it. I know this will probably surprise nobody because I've been a big champion of this film ever since it came out.
It's a very good movie.
Yeah. It's the one that made me go, maybe I like musicals. What do you have for number four?
Number four, I have Christopher Nolan's 2014 space movie, Interstellar, which starred Matthew McConaughey and Anne Hathaway as these astronauts that kind of go out into space and through a wormhole that they've discovered to kind of find a place for Earth to settle. But it during all of this, stuff is still going back on Earth, and like the Earth is falling apart. Like it's, humanity is falling into famine, and NASA has kind of enlisted the top minds to come up with a way to get us off of there. If this mission that, you know, the astronauts does not succeed. And the way they tie those two together with this crazy time loop kind of thing going on at the end is nutso. Like all Nolan stuff, visually arresting. There's a like just a visually stunning set piece on a water planet that is, it's amazing. The black hole stuff, which is evidently like scientifically accurate the way a black hole would look. It's a great, great visual, like, you know, tour de force. So
I think that film broke my brain. I don't think I've totally understood it when I watched it. I don't think I've gone back, but Nolan always swings for the fences, man. And
he's one, like, if he has a movie coming out, like,
yeah.
It is on my list to see that year, because
it's kind of become like a thing that people pick on people, like, oh, the film bros really love Nolan, you know. But like, there's a reason that, like, even like people who are not super into film but think they are like Nolan, because his movies are fucking like memorable. Like there's something, you know?
Yeah, like there's something anybody can latch on to, like whether it's the visuals and like something like Interstellar or you know, his World War II movie. He gets great performances out of his actors. And like sometimes like his, like with Interstellar and like Inception and stuff, it's maybe not always clear what the fuck is going on,
but I mean,
it leaves you wanting to talk about it when you're done.
There's a lot to pick apart in both of those films. And like, if you rewatch them, you could figure it out. It's not like he didn't know what he was saying or whatever. I just was like, what the fuck is going on? But I did like it. I liked it, Interstellar, when I saw it. I just haven't seen it since. Same thing with Inception. I've only seen them both once, but, sure.
What do you got at number four?
My number four, another film from Damien Chazelle, Whiplash from 2014. This is just a great fucking drama with basically two characters. It stars like J.K. Simmons as this total fucking asshole music teacher, and Miles Teller as a guy who wants to be a jazz drummer. And the film is basically, you know, a teacher-student film about, like, you know, this teacher trying to, you know, lift someone up and make them the great thing that they want to be. But it's, it might not sound like much, and, like, you know, going into it, I wasn't expecting, like, to be blown away as I was, but, like, from the description that I could give you, like, you wouldn't think it's one of the most intense fucking movies you've ever seen, but it is. Like, it's just, like, incredibly intense, and a lot of that has to do with J.K. Simmons, like, just blistering performance and, like, the borderline abusive behavior. Actually, not borderline. Straight up abusive behavior of this teacher. And you're left asking at the end, did that teacher cross the line, and was he just an abusive asshole, or were his methods effective? And if his methods effective, was like the means worth the end? You know what I mean? Like,
right.
And it's one of those like movies you kind of have to wrestle with the answer for yourself. Like, did he make this kid great? And if he did, was it worth like the kind of torture that he put the kid through? Just, I mean, again, I love pretty much all of Damien Chazelle's, even First Man from a couple of years ago, I thought was fucking fantastic. Yeah. But Whiplash is his, like, fucking masterpiece, dude. Like, it just, I love a great film with adults, and, you know, the fireworks and the explosions are the dialogue. It's the human drama, and that's what fucking Whiplash delivers in spades. Like, it's just man, is it a great film. Move on now to the top three.
Yeah.
Chris, your number three.
My number three is Darren Aronofsky's 2010 ballet Nightmare. Black Swan. I remember
you love this. Yeah, yeah.
Natalie Portman, Mila Kunis, this tale of like sanity cracking as she like strives to become the lead in Swan Lake. And you just see her deteriorate until she's like totally insane at the end. Aronofsky is there was a point like where he had from between 2000 and 2010, I think like the dude could do no wrong, really.
Yeah, absolutely.
He has not been as hot since then.
Have you seen Mother?
I have. That's a weird fucking movie.
It didn't work for me. Yeah.
Like it's I mean, and like. There. Part of the thing is he makes weird fucking movies. It's just like what he's doing now isn't necessarily connecting with me. But Black Swan did. It's a haunting film. Borderline horror in places, but more of a psychological drama. So
I'd call it a horror. I like to claim things for the genre though, but
yeah.
you know, for me, I think I will always love, I think for me, his best film is Requiem for a Dream.
Sure. I
really love The Wrestler.
The Wrestler's excellent, yeah.
But Black Swan's great, too. I'm not surprised to hear it's on your list. I remember you really, really loving Black Swan. I like it, too. It's one I need to watch again, I think. My number three is Drive from 2011. Just a really cool fucking genre film. Kind of slow paced, but like kind of felt like a modern update of Taxi Driver a little bit, but you know, way better than last year's Joker. It's like the only like normal fucking thing Nicholas Winding Refn has done that director.
Yeah, that guy's weird, man.
I expected like big things from him after this.
He's been a train wreck.
Yeah. I mean, there's people that love some of the other stuff that he's done, but whether he ever makes another one I love or not, I think this is just one of the absolute standout films of the decade. Fucking, like, a star-making performance, I think, from Gosling. Just an awesome, like awesome kind of, like, lonely guy fucking snaps movie. Cool, like Albert Brooks is like a mob boss that's like against type. That soundtrack fucking kicks ass. It looks awesome. Like the little bit of action we do get in it is fucking pretty damn impressive. You get like an exploding head here and there. Cool, like some cool car chase shit. And just like that fucking climax where he's trying to take on the mob, including the fuck is his name? I can't remember his name right now. Dude with the funny face. If it comes back to me, it does. But yeah, Drive is fucking great, man. Like that's one I've probably watched at least half a dozen times since it's come out. You know, I have it on Blu-ray, and every once in a while, it's like time to watch Drive again.
It's a fun one. It's also a movie that I feel has more substance than his other films that he's done. So
yeah, it is one where like people will kind of accuse of being like all style, but I'm like, no, it's there's some stuff going on there for sure.
Yeah, you want to see all style, go watch the next two films he released.
Yeah, I can't remember the one he did with was it Elle Fanning or whatever. I can't remember the name of
Neon Demon.
Dear God, dude, that thing was fucking,
yeah.
Again, if you like it,
no, I mean, like, look, like,
it didn't work for me.
Yeah, there's something didn't like Drive clicked for me. I really liked it, like a lot, like you. And his next two films, though, did not like. So it happens.
All right, top two, number two.
All right. Well, I'm sure everybody knew that this was coming at some point. I can't have a best of the decade without having a Star Wars film on it.
Ah.
So, yeah.
I bet you I could guess the one. Hold on. Force Awakens.
Yeah. 2015's right. Force Awakens. Look, I mean, there are issues that we could go over and talk about with Disney's handling of Star Wars. I don't necessarily subscribe to all the complaints. There are legitimate concerns in the way they handled this new trilogy. But yeah. When this movie came out, and still even watching it now, like it works. It is the right course correction that I think the series needed at that point, to prove to people that like they knew what the fuck they were doing. Unfortunately, they didn't plan much further after that, but and then like just went off on some crazy tangents. But The Force Awakens, like you want to say it's kind of a crazy ass remake of A New Hope, fine, say that. But guess what? That movie works, and so does this one. It hits you in the correct, you know, ways with the nostalgia. The action is solid. It's a lot of fun. Like, there are complaints that people make about like Rey being able to fly. Like they're not watching the movie all the way though, because she explains stuff like as to why. Like, even if they're just throwaway lines, people just, oh well, like I don't like this or I don't like that.
I've seen people like get mad about the trash compactor line. I'm like, I don't know.
It's funny.
These movies are fun. Like, just let it. Just fucking have fun. God damn it.
And, like, come on. And it comes like, it's Harrison Ford. Just like, I wouldn't even doubt that. Like, he probably threw that shit out there on his own. Like, like, and they just like, yeah, cause he's notorious for doing that. Right. Like, just kind of like riffing on stuff. And I wouldn't even doubt that, like, they're in the middle of like filming and like he throws out the trash compactor line just off the cuff and like it hits. And I think it works in the film. Like, it hits it. I like the new characters. You know, I really liked Rey and Finn and Poe and the new droid. You know, Han coming back and then Han dying, like, was it all works. And for me, it's like it was this high point in, yeah, you waited a decade for a new Star Wars movie after thinking like it's never gonna happen, like, and then to get this and to be as high quality as it was, made me very, very happy. So
I agree with everything you said. I remember that year we actually both gave it our film of the year. I watched it last month, kind of in the lead up to the release of The Rise of Skywalker. That's the name of it, right?
Yep.
I was like, oh, I'm gonna watch these. You know, I didn't do like you watch all of Star Wars, but I watched Force Awakens and I watched The Last Jedi. And dude, I get it if you want to nitpick at these movies, but to me, they're always just been kind of fun, like,
yes,
kid movies that you can still enjoy. And like,
exactly, like, I think that's the problem, is people are looking at them like
they nitpick it a little too much.
And it's like, look, there's an argument to be made that we should ask, we should require more from our entertainment. But sometimes dumb shit can just be dumb shit. And that's kind of what Star Wars is. It's just dumb fun where shit blows up and like we don't really need to get into the nitty gritty of like Jedi and Sith. And
I think the people that pick it apart, it almost feels to be like they don't watch other movies. It's just like, dude, move on. And there's the new movie every week. Like, fucking
right.
Like, why are we still arguing about The Last Jedi years later?
It shouldn't be. Like, there's been plenty of other movies. There's plenty of other shit to complain about.
Like, there's plenty of real life shit that upsets me way more. But yeah, I love Force Awakens. It's one of my favorite. Like, I put it in the top half at least of the Star Wars films.
Yeah.
For a while there, I was saying it's my favorite. But I think I like Return of the Jedi. I think there's something about the 1977 original that just, there's something about that.
Yeah, I go back and I think the original trilogy is ahead of it, but it's just so much fun that like it's right up there with those films for me. It captures that feel. Like, that's something that with all of these Disney movies, to me, where I go, whether, you know, I like them or don't like them as much as I probably should, being a huge Star Wars fan, is, does it get the feel right?
Yeah.
And I think Force Awakens nails it. And for what it's worth, I also think The Rise of Skywalker hits that feel. It feels like Star Wars. maybe not a great movie, but if you really look at all the Star Wars movies, they're not technically great films. They're just fun. And sometimes that's all movies have to be.
I haven't seen it yet, so I can't comment. But I did see a spoiler for that new one, and boy, I wasn't happy about the spoiler. After I just got done telling people to have fun and enjoy these movies, it's just all right, we're not going to get into this here, but just basically the thing that drove me nuts is, like, you tell me one thing in The Last Jedi, and then you don't stick to that. Kind of bugs me, but whatever. My number two, Chris, was up until a week or two ago, it was my number one. And that is The Tree of Life from 2011. A movie that I know you didn't quite connect with.
Not at all.
Yeah. It's weird. It's unconventional, right? It's like a movie.
Very, that, yes.
You know, it's, if you had to explain to somebody what it is, it's basically a guy looking back on growing up in like the 1950s in like a small town and kind of remembering what it was like to be a little boy.
With an inexplicable 20 minutes the evolution of the earth.
Yep.
In it as well.
Yeah. Yeah, it's this guy looking back and remembering what it's like to be a kid and kind of remembering like his like strict dad and what that was like for him growing up. But yeah, it's like painted against this canvas that is like covering, like you said, from like the creation of fucking Earth, the dinosaurs, to the end of time. Like it's just like, it's a movie about a specific point in 1950s, like a specific point in time, but like the canvas is just all of time. It's a religious film. It's a spiritual film. And it's one I only watched once, and then I rewatched it last year. And to me, it's beautiful. Like it just looks great, and it's got this really beautiful score. But to me, it's just like, it's hard to put into words what I think is so great about it, because I think it does something. It expresses things that you could only express in a film. This movie couldn't be a book. It couldn't be a TV show. It couldn't be like a story you just tell someone. It's specifically works in the medium that it was made for. And I use that medium to kind of express things of beauty that you can't find words for. Maybe it's because I was on acid when I rewatched it, but I fucking love The Tree of Life. And for the longest time, it was my number one, but there's something I began to wrestle with, and we'll get into that in a minute. But let's talk about what is your number one of the decade, Chris.
My number one of the decade is, I think you've had a director that's appeared on here twice.
Yeah.
And I am now dropping another one that is now going to appear on mine twice.
Scorsese twice, and I had Chazelle twice.
Yeah. Christopher Nolan's 2010's Inception, which we briefly touched on when we talked about Interstellar. This is sci-fi at its... at its peak. Like it is mind-bending. It is visually stunning. It has a awesomely simple premise that is nuts. it's a variety of different genres mixed in to that premise as well, like on top of just being kind of like this sci-fi concept. It's also a heist movie and an action film and a, like a video game film in certain ways. And it is, has some of the best, effects, I think, of the decade. That hallway gun scene is still outstanding. Mm-hmm. They did that practically. So, it's a beautiful and, fucking mind bending film. Like really is kind of nuts.
I will say this, it's you know, between Interstellar and Inception I think is the better film. I haven't watched it in a long time, but I remember it has probably one of my favorite final shots of the decade.
Yeah, the top
And I don't even remember what the meaning of that was, but I just remember it had a lot of meaning when I watched it. And I loved how it cuts to black before you see whether it falls or not. I love when films do
that.
Yeah,
well, because the top spinning, if it continued to spin, you were in the dream. And if it fell over, you were in reality.
And it's like you as the audience
don't know.
Are kind of put in his shoes in that way, but then also it's like, well, you decide. You know, and I love right. movies that do that.
Like,
I love
that kind of. Is he staying inside to get his happy ending, or did he actually get his happy ending? You decide. You make up your own mind on it.
I love that shit. Awesome. Like, I think Prisoners kind of has like a final shot like that too.
Where yeah, it's very
like,
similar.
Where it's like you see that. You're like, oh, you have to fill in what Jake Gyllenhaal is going to do after that. I don't need everything to be wrapped up in a big bow always. Sometimes I like to leave it open a little bit.
Yeah.
I think film is like a great like medium for that.
It's another one. Like, I mean, that final shot is one that I remember I saw this with friends at a late night showing. We probably went like 11:30 at night on a Friday night. And we came out of the theater and then talked about it in the fucking like out in the parking lot. It's yeah. like 2:30 in the morning when finally security is like, guys, you gotta go. Like,
we're still trying to piece this shit together.
Yeah, we're still like, come on, we like you got go to a diner or something. You can't right. hang out in the parking lot. Like, and that's something I mean it's what I love about doing with it's this rare. Show. We can talk about film, but it's also like I just love coming out of a film and people being like, dude, what the fuck was that? And like you start piecing it together and giving your own theories and your own criticisms and your takes on it. And it film should be a communal kind of event. And in a lot of ways we've gotten away from that, and because we're lazy now and want to watch everything on our TVs. But I still love going to the theater, and then, you know, if you're going with people and then you come out and like you want to talk about it. Good movies make you want to talk about it.
Yeah, and it's kind of a rare thing, like especially with my girlfriend. She like doesn't. She just her reaction to the movie is it was fine or I hated it. That's basically it.
Right.
So, but very rarely, once in a while, all of a sudden she like wants to talk. About it. And, I mean, it's a hard thing to do with you know even people that love film, like where you're just want to talk about it for hours after, you know. Chris, my film of the decade is a film that I really enjoyed when I saw it, and in like the fucking dozen times I've seen it since, I love it. And that is Once Upon a Time in Hollywood from 2019. This movie, man, I'm telling you, you gotta rewatch it. It's more than just what you think the first time you see it. It's a super quotable movie.
Yeah.
It's a fun hangout movie. Like, just hanging out with Rick Dalton and Cliff Booth is a lot of fun. It's a poignant film in a way, too, for all it's, like, fun and, like, the big surprise of the ending. There's a little bit of sadness at the end because you're like, oh, you know, he's imagining a world where, like, things don't suck as much. And
yeah.
You know, Sharon Tate got to live, and she went on. She had a happy life, and she became friends with her neighbor, and you imagine good things for them in the future. And it's just like, it's poignant because you know the real life version, you know, is like horrible, right?
Yeah.
That, you know, the big climax is fucking masterful, like the last 15 minutes or so with
so much fun.
Brad Pitt on acid fucking taking on these hippies. It was one of my favorite theater going experiences of the decade. Cause while, there's parts, you know, it feels a little long. Like I felt the length of it, and there's parts in the middle where I felt it kind of sag the first time I was watching it, where I'm like, all right, where are we going? Where are we going with this? But also in the theater, when it reached that point at the end, I never saw an audience lose its mind like that. Like my audience was fucking flipping out at that ending. And it was just so much fun because you're just like, it keeps going on. See, whatever's just like, oh my God, like, you know, and you know, I'm sitting there clapping and stuff and laughing. And then just rewatching it, you just start to pick out little things you like every time. Like I liked it the first time, but the scene where they're waiting to shoot and it's like him and this little girl sitting in front of a bar and, you know, him talking about the book that he's reading and how it's about like an aging cowboy and he ain't what he used to be. And she's like, that's really sad. And he's like, you'll be living it in 15 years. You know? And it's like, it's funny, but it also is sad. Like, it is true. Like, that's just how life is, you know?
Also, so much of like, that. What's even funnier about that is because, like, so, you know, at that point, Rick Dalton is like, what, 40 something?
Yeah.
Maybe even a little bit older. But he's talking to like this 8 or 10 year old girl.
Yeah.
And he's not wrong either. Like for her, like it's such a biting commentary on Hollywood and how we treat actors and actresses.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
I didn't like, think of that like angle. In 15 years, she will be feeling that because they're going to be playing her in like fucking mother roles or grandmother roles, or she won't be working.
Like, or she'll be on drugs. And you know what I mean? Like Hollywood kids have to grow up. Yeah. A little faster. Yeah, I didn't even think about that part. But that's the thing. This thing is like a gold mine of shit. And I think it's one of his like, it's like one of his sweetest films. Like it's like the movie's sweet. Like it has heart, you know.
Yeah.
And it's just at the end of the day, it's just fucking fun to hang out with. You know, them two, like Cliff and Rick. It's a total like. I don't know. I think I said this last time, but it's like this guy tweeted like the best thing about owning this movie is I could come home and turn it on drunk for the rest of my life. Like I could come home drunk and turn it on for the rest of my life. And it's like, it's a movie you could watch 20 minutes in the middle and have fun with or whatever, you know, like,
yeah, you can pick a scene and like, that's all
it's like an album. You can just play it. Like, I want to hear this song or I can play the whole album. I'm telling you, buy it, dude. Like, I bought it and I'm so happy. Most films I buy on disc, but this one I own digitally, so it's even easier for when I'm just in the mood to play it. I play it. And these are all reasons why at the end of the day, like, you know, even though I gave Irishman my film of the year last year, I love Once Upon a Time more, and I'm giving it my film of the decade because I think this is a movie that's going to have real staying power. I think it's one people will be watching 20, 30, 40 years from now for sure. And I think, you know, Tarantino has had a career where nearly all of his films, I think, are great. But there's something about it, this one, that just, like, he's matured and he's really kind of nailed something here. So, yeah, I love it. I mean, there's no secret that I love it, but I love it more with each watch. So,
yeah, it's a great choice.
So that is our top 10 non-horror films of the decade. When we come back for our final episode, we're going to be talking horror and we'll be home talking horror. So look forward to that. Real quick before we go, and I think we touched on it a little bit, but we're not going to be able to do any more like, you know, reviews of new movies and stuff. Is there anything you've seen in the last, you know, since our break that you want? I think there's one you probably have an opinion or two on, you kind of touched on. Full review, but just any movies you want to throw out there that people should see or not see or you think were notable?
I saw Rise of Skywalker. I liked it. You check out my it's not really a review of it, but my kind of like take on how I felt watching that movie and I really enjoyed it. It has issues. Plenty of issues, but it's also a ton of fun. I saw the new Jumanji movie too. Not as good as the first one, but still fun. Which seems to be a theme for things that came out in December. I think that's it. I don't really think I saw much. I saw The Witcher on Netflix. Yeah. That's pretty good. And The Mandalorian ended solid. Very, very good ending to that as well.
I enjoyed Mandalorian quite a bit. I will throw out a recommendation for you, Chris. Check out The Headhunter on Shudder.
The Headhunter? Is that a movie series?
It's a movie. It's like a really short film. It's like maybe 75 minutes, and it feels like... what made me think of it was you talking about The Witcher. It feels like if they made like a movie out of like Skyrim or... Dark Souls or something, but it's like
Nordic themed.
Yeah, it's like, you know, kind of medieval. It's about a guy that hunts monsters.
I can get behind that.
He like hunts monsters and he hangs their heads on his wall. On his wall, like he cuts their heads off. He's got a wall full of like his trophy heads, and he's looking for the monster that killed his daughter. The two cool things about it is like there's maybe a minute of dialogue in the film total, and it's also like it manages to feel like this epic thing on a really small budget, and it does that by actually not showing much. But I'd say it's worth checking out. It's short. I'm not saying like I think I gave it 3 stars, but it kind of surprised me for what it was. But
nice.
I'll throw 2 movies out though. Before we go, I finally saw Ad Astra last night, and I dug that movie. I know it's like that's a movie that people are really split on. I know you liked it.
Enough. It was fine.
I dug it. I really dug it, but I think the thing that holds me back, I think I gave it 3.5 on Letterboxd. The thing that holds me back from like going higher is like while I really like dug it and admired what it was doing, for some reason I didn't feel the emotional beats that it wanted me to feel, or I don't know, maybe it didn't want me to feel them. What'd you say?
I could see that. Yeah. Like it's very detached,
which was weird, and maybe that's like part of the point or something, but it's also about this guy who like has got issues with his dad and stuff, and I thought like this is material that I should be sitting there crying at it, and I was just like, that's really good, but I'm dry-eyed. And then one more thing I'll throw out, and I think if this is still playing in theaters by you, go see it. Uncut Gems, dude. Fucking awesome. If I had seen it by the time we did our top 10 of the year list, it would have been on my top 10. Of course, everyone talks about Sandler being great in it. But for me, it's like the Safdie brothers, their direction and like the pace and intensity of the film is really impressive. It keeps up like this kind of fast, kind of chaotic pace for over 2 hours. It's got a hell of an ending, like a really good ending, I think. And it's got like one of the coolest fucking scores I have heard in forever. I know I shared some of the music with you, Chris, but I bought the soundtrack. That's how much I liked it. So
nice.
If that's still playing by you, you haven't seen that yet, have you?
I have not seen that.
If it's still playing by you, check it out. Although I heard it's going to be a Netflix film, like coming to Netflix very soon.
Yeah, so. I heard it's going to be there very shortly. So
maybe just wait.
Might wait that out.
It's good. Like it's worth the trip to the theater, though. So
okay.
That'll do it. We'll be back with our final episode and our top 10 horror films of the decade.
Nice.
Movie dudes. Do 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 do.